You are Locked On Pirates, your daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to Locked On Pirates. I am, of course, your host who does the most, Ethan Smith. Welcome back to Locked On Pirates and the final Division Day podcast before the MLB season starts tomorrow as the Pirates kick off their season at 2:20 Eastern time in Wrigley Field. Chad Kuhl will take the mound against Kyle Hendricks, but you know, it would have been interesting if the Cubs and the Pirates one would have been today, but we have an even better matchup today as we have Mr. Lucas Smith. No, we are not related. I have got that question from you guys before. We are not related, from Locked On Cardinals. How are you doing today, Lucas?
I am good, Ethan. Yeah, no relation, but friends nonetheless, and part of the Locked On family. So
we are somehow Pirates and Cardinals fans that get along.
There's a few and far between, but I enjoy it.
Oh yeah, of course. And I am going to be asking Lucas an array of questions, much like I did last week with Jake. And of course, I'm going to start with number one. Easily the biggest offseason addition you guys had was Nolan Arenado. And let's be honest here, it's an amazing addition, but tell me realistically, instead of saying, oh, he's going to propel you into the World Series, how much does he realistically help this ball club with where he's at now?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that there is a balance between, you know, I think when the traders happened, I was like, okay, we're right up there with the Padres and Dodgers. And like, no, like I'm not here to say that the Cardinals are going to beat the Padres and Dodgers in the postseason. I'm not saying it's impossible, but realistically, to answer your point, to me, this makes them the clear division favorites. Okay. I think it makes them anywhere from an 88 to 93 win team, probably an upper ceiling of 95 is probably the cap that I would go. But I've been saying anywhere from 90 to 92 wins in my prediction questionnaires and things like that. So he makes this lineup, he makes the team better on both sides of the baseball, right? Because for whatever reason, he's going to be batting third, not fourth. It was thought to be that Goldie was going to bat third and Arenado bat fourth, but Goldie was going to hit second and Arenado third with whoever's hitting cleanup, kind of, you know, O'Neill, DeYoung, a combination of guys. So that's a discussion for a different time, but he's still a very good three hitter, as we've seen in Colorado. And defensively, he can play defense no matter what ballpark he's playing in, before you ask about the Coors effect. So defensively, he elevates this team to a different level and adds a lot of gold to the infield. So, you know, he definitely doesn't put the Cardinals up there with the Padres and Dodgers, because I do think the Padres and Dodgers are the class of the NL, but he makes this team a hell of a lot better.
Oh, yeah. And like, one thing that a lot of people would say about why most teams are not up there with the Dodgers and the Padres is because of pitching. So you guys have, I would say, a really good, like, kind of top three, I would say, in Flaherty, Wainwright, and Martinez. Who are the guys to watch that could be winning you that third game in a series that wins a series as your fourth and fifth pitcher?
So right now, KK Kim and Miles Michaelis are both on the shelf. Kim is expected to miss 2 to 3 starts in the rotation. Michaelis won't be back in the earliest at first week of May, with a couple of injuries. So it'll be John Gant and Daniel Ponce de Leon as the two starters to fill that role. Ponce de Leon had an incredible last handful of starts. He pitched 5, 6, and 5 shutout innings, somewhere thereabouts, against Milwaukee and Pittsburgh in 3 starts to close out last year. This will be John Gant's second go at the rotation. He also had a go in 2018. Numbers are better as a reliever for John Gant, but he's got a really good fastball, and the Vulcan changeup is his big pitch. He's got monstrous hands that can really grip a changeup well. So I think that it'll be whoever pitches better keeps their spot longer, because Cam is expected to come back. Cam is going to be a starter. He earned that with his pretty good performance last year. So whoever pitches better between Gant and Ponce de Leon is going to keep that spot longer. And then whenever Michaelis comes back, he'll also be a starter, because Michaelis was never in a bullpen, right? So, but I'm really high on this pitching staff, to be honest with you. I think that this is a staff that can surprise some people. Like you mentioned, it definitely is top heavy. You've got more question marks the farther you go down the rotation and the farther you go down in the bullpen. But I think if things can click right, this rotation and this bullpen can get some outs and get out at a high level.
Oh yeah. And then, I mean, going back to position players in your lineup, obviously everybody knows about Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado. who are some guys that are going to be like the X factors that are going to maybe hit maybe in that 270, 280 range, but make the real difference in why the Cardinals win some games if Goldie and Arenado are 0 for 3?
Well, I think that a guy that we'll talk about in a little bit, Dylan Carlson, is definitely up there as an X factor. But a guy that really impressed spring training to me was Tyler O'Neill. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that has never hit above 240, 250 in that range, but he's got incredible power, led the Cardinals in home runs last year, albeit a shortened season, but he's always had that light tower power. It's just a matter of, can he put it all together? I don't think O'Neill's going to be a 270, 280 hitter, but if he can hit 250, 260 even, but with 25 to 30 home runs, which he has the power potential to do, that's production the Cardinals haven't seen in left field since Matt Holliday. And that's like 2013, 2014 Matt Holliday, right? That's not even, 2016 Matt Holliday. So he's definitely going to be the X factor. Paul DeJong is also a guy that is going to get the first shot at the cleanup position behind Arenado. But in my opinion, whoever hits behind Arenado has to be the hottest hitter between Carlson, O'Neill, and DeJong. But I do think O'Neill can take a big step forward this year. Won a Gold Glove last year, showed a lot of impressed a lot in spring with the type of at-bats he was taking. So my X factor for me is Tyler O'Neill.
Awesome. And much earlier, like depending on the order that these are posted in, but I will be answering questions from Lucas on his podcast as we talked about the Todd Frazier situation, which has been very interesting. So what's going on with Matt Carpenter over there in St. Louis?
Matt Carpenter is a polarizing figure right now in Cardinal Nation, Ethan. He everybody's got their takes. He's similar to Harrison Bader. Everybody's got their takes on one way or the other. But Carpenter is a guy that has been a Cardinal since 2000 and got some time in 2011, really since 2012. They drafted him. He's had great moments, but he was 2 for 36 this spring training with a double and a couple RBIs. So not good numbers, right? But his career numbers are up there. But he's been, for lack of a better word, abysmal since 2019 season. He made the roster because he's owed $18 million and because his name is Matt Carpenter. Statistically speaking, there's no way Matt Carpenter should have made this roster. And I love Matt Carpenter as a person and as a player, history guy, love it, right? But he's going to need to hit. He's not going to start. Tommy Edman's going to get the start at second base. He's going to need to be better than 2 for 36. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, right? So he's going to be a bench bat. He could be a really good bench bat, or he could be an anchor, and the negative type of anchor, weighing this lineup down when he gets the starts. But I'm pulling for the guy. It's tough to see a lifelong Cardinal struggle the way he did, and because it was tough to see. But I'm hoping that he can bounce back and have a decent year in 2021. And what the future holds, I think that this might be his last year, regardless of how he performs. But not looking good right now for Carp.
Oh yeah, and then you spoke on lifelong Cardinals in Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina. This team is pretty much, in my opinion, primed to win this division as long as things go a certain way. Mm-hmm. If they make the postseason and say play like Atlanta or New York or whoever in the first round, who's to say they're not trying to win this for Molina and Wainwright and maybe even Matt Carpenter as a last ride?
Absolutely. I think that, Molina and Wainwright would not have come back if they didn't think that this team could win. Molina and Wainwright have really done nothing but win since their tenure. I think that they've had one losing season in 2008 or 2007, I believe it was, after they won the World Series. But, this is a franchise that has won. And especially when you talk about lifelong Cardinals, Wainwright and Molina don't want to go out on the bottom. They want to go out on top, right? And it's not official that they're retiring, and I'm not trying to get a scoop in or anything like that, but all the signs point to them calling it quits at the end of this year. So I think that definitely that's a good point, that this is a motivating factor for them to perform. And Wainwright has looked extremely good in spring training, so I think that this team could get hot and make a run if they get hot in October, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And, as we kind of wind down the questions – what team scares you the most in the NL Central? Obviously not us, but like what team scares you the most in the NL Central?
You know what? We're talking about on my pod, the Pirates could be a thorn in the side, or the way you put it, a cannon in the side of a ship for a team. So I'm not counting out the Pirates completely. I'm counting them out of the division, but not in terms of being competitive. But I think that for me, it's Milwaukee. I think that's despite the Jock Peterson deal, Chicago took way too many steps back. There's way too many question marks with their core four. Meanwhile, Milwaukee gets better. I think Christian Yelich is an addition simply because he's going to return to form and he was non-existent last year. The Colton Wong signing, I hated it as a Cardinal fan, but I loved it for Milwaukee. He's a great fit there. They're going to get Lorenzo Cain back after he opted out last season. They've got good pitching from the starting rotation down to the bullpen. They're really similar to the Cardinals in terms of their strengths and weaknesses, except for their strength is in the outfield and the Cardinals' strength is in the infield. But this is definitely, to me, those are the two favorites. And I think that it could be the first team to 90 wins gets this division. And I think both Milwaukee and St. Louis are capable of that 90-win mark. And that said, I believe the Cardinals will win the division, but Milwaukee scares me the most.
Now, honestly, like a side note, I would not mind seeing game 163 between the Cardinals and the Milwaukee Brewers.
That would be fun. Throw Jack Flaherty against Corbin Burns or Brandon Woodruff or even Wainwright in that mix. That would be fun.
Oh, yeah. And outside of, okay, let's assume the Cardinals win the division, and I've asked Jake this, I've asked Jeff this, I've asked everybody in this like division about this. What team would you want or not want to play the most in the NL East? Because I'm assuming whoever wins the NL West is the number one seed. They don't have to play us. They play the winner of the wild card.
Right.
What team in the NL East would you want to play and which team would you not want in the first round of the playoffs in the NLDS?
That's a good question. I think that this is a tough one for me. Just offhand, I would not want to play the Braves, just in the sense of, you know, they're going to be pissed from the beating they took in 2019 in game 5. I think that they have a lot of the characters on that team still there. Obviously it's a little bit different, Ozuna switching sides, but I wouldn't want to play Atlanta. I've always been a fan of Atlanta, so I'm not going to want to play them. You know, and again, this is no disrespect to anybody, but I think Washington would be easier to face, in my opinion. I really like what Washington has on their squad with good pitching from the top down to the bottom. They've got Juan Soto, obviously, as the character there. But if I had to pick one to face, it'd be Washington, because I don't think as good as the Mets got, I think the Mets are more of a wild card team. I think this, you know, again, this is me offhand from afar, right? But I think that this is Washington and Atlanta's division right now.
Oh yeah. And final notes, like anything on the Cardinals about that Pirates fans should know.
You know what? I think that this will be a fun year for sure. I think that, you know, regardless of how, you know, uncompetitive the Pirates might be, the Pirates and Cardinals always seem to play close games, no matter how good or bad the Pirates or Cardinals are. I'm excited for it.
Oh yeah.
Division, so it should be fun in that regard.
Oh yeah, of course. And of course you guys can follow Lucas at LJ Fastball on Twitter or at LO_Cardinals. It's a little different for mine. I think mine is just at Locked On Pirates, but like I guess LO, maybe somebody else had the Locked On Cardinals name before that.
Arizona,
but guys, starting tomorrow, I will be on the Locker Room app. So far on my live Twitter feed, you guys have chosen for me to do a live watch along with you guys. I gave you the option between post game, live, or both. I probably will do both anyway, just because it's going to be a very exciting day to be covering Pittsburgh Pirates baseball. And who do you guys play to start the year? I'm actually very interested.
Cardinals are at Cincinnati at 3:10 Central. So it'll be 4:10 over on the East Coast. And it'll be Jack Flaherty. And I honestly don't know who Cincinnati
probably has. Castillo.
I think it's Castillo. Yeah, but Flaherty gets the ball on Thursday. So I'm excited for it.
So what? So that leaves the Brewers. That means they're playing a non-division opponent. Interesting. Right. Well, either way, we'll probably all be watching closely as the NL Central battles it out this year. Thank you so much, Lucas.
And by the way, today, guys, the episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off of your next order. Today's episode is also brought to you by BetOnline.ag. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, BetOnline.ag. Sign up for a free account at BetOnline.ag and use that promo code LOCKED15 for your 50% welcome bonus, meaning they will give you free money to bet on Major League Baseball, the NBA, the Final Four and March Madness, etc., whatever you want for your betting needs, make sure you check out betonline.ag.
All right, Ethan, so we talked Cardinal baseball, we've talked Pirate baseball on our respective podcast, but let's talk with, or not with, but about Dylan Carlson and Ke'Bryan Hayes. All things considered, in your and I's opinion, the two favorites for Rookie of the Year. You mentioned off air that we could probably see, probably could have a co-Rookie of the Year award winner for Ke'Bryan Hayes and Dylan Carlson. But I feel like, you know, you talk about it a lot. But again, and I'll do the same thing, 2-minute elevator pitch. Why is Ke'Bryan Hayes your Rookie of the Year?
Probably just because of the fact that he's going to be the best player on his team in a way. I know that's going to sound very weird for being a Rookie of the Year, but the case for it is I've also seen a lot of people say the kid could even probably get more than just Rookie of the Year voting. Like, I've seen some people option him into the All-Star game. I'm like, okay, let's pump brakes for a second. But if you watch them over spring training, I mean, every ball he hits seems like it's over 100 miles per hour off his bat. Even his outs look impressive. Like, right fielders are struggling to catch the ball over him. And I mean, the kid was up there in doubles. He's one, arguably to me, already a top 15, 16, like third baseman defensively. If his back can keep doing what it's doing like it did in the month of September last year, he's going to be a superstar by like 2 years from now. Not trying to like push this all on him, but like at some point, you're going to have to consider the kid a really good baseball player. He already is. Can he take it to the next level? The only case I would say against him in this debate against Dylan Carlson is Dylan Carlson's team is actually going to be winning, and he could be contributing to some of that winning, while Hayes can only do so much with the roster around him where we're going to probably win 60 to 65 games. But if you had to ask me, I think Hayes wins it purely off of the fact that I think after what he showed in September last year and what he's shown in spring training, I think he brings all that with confidence into the year. I think he starts really hot, dwindles down in the months of May, June, and July, and then picks it back up August, September. Think he finishes around the 270, 275 batting average range. Couldn't really give you a like option on home runs and RBIs, but that's why I think he wins.
I like it. I'm going to go, you know, for Dylan Carlson, I think this is a guy that he's a five-tool guy. He is somebody that the Cardinals are very high on. He's got the power. He's got the speed. He's got the contact ability, the arm, the fielding. I think that's five, right? The five tools that you need, right? So he's definitely somebody that can do it all. I think that he brings an added element as well when you talk about what you can do in a baseball field, because he is a switch hitter. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Ke'Bryan Hayes is not. Correct?
He's not. He's only a righty.
Right. So Carlson can do that from both sides. That's an added bonus thing. And I think if what Aram Layton projected on my Twitter a couple weeks ago of Carlson hitting 25 home runs and, quote, a ton of doubles, whether that be 25, 30, 40, I don't know what he meant by that. But I think if he can hit, you know, if he could be a 25, 25 guy, 25 home runs, 25 doubles, maybe even 30, 35, like that's a big range, you know that. But I think that if he's able to get that number, get probably 25, 25, that seriously, to me, puts him in serious consideration for that award. And then you also bring into what he can do defensively. We saw that in the postseason. He made a couple of diving catches against the Padres. And what I really like for Carlson is that he has struggled in the minors, but then come back in the minors. If you look at his or not even in the minors, but last year, in his final 12 games after an abysmal start of a 162 batting average in his first 23 games, his final 12 games, he hit 278, on base of 325, slugged 600, two home runs, 11 RBIs, throw in four doubles and a triple. He did a lot in his second call up. So I think that he's had the ability to adjust. And I think Ke'Bryan Hayes is going to have to show that earlier, because he had straight success last year for the most part in his tenure in 2020. Do you think Hayes is going to be able to make that adjustment?
I think so. Now, the only thing that I would say against it, again, is they're already asking him of so much. Like, there's not really another guy in the lineup right now that you could say purely, other than maybe Brian Reynolds, Kevin Newman, and Adam Frazier, that's going to be consistently hitting the baseball. Hayes is probably going to be hitting number two in the lineup, too. That's asking a lot for a kid that only played 24 major league games so far in his career. Albeit he hit 376 in those games, and that's better than Barry Bonds, Roberto Clemente, and Andrew McCutchen in their first 24 games. But either way, 24 games versus 162 games, you have a bad 24 game stretch over a 162 game season, it might not affect you. It might affect you a lot. If you have a really good one, like he did last year, that affects you a lot. Like a really good 24 game stretch. Say he comes out in his first 24 games and has the exact same stats as he had in those 24 games last year. I think he cements himself as a rookie of the year, like favorite immediately. 376, five home runs, 11 RBIs with like 20 something hits. Like that would be nuts. Now, does he do that? I'm not sure. Like Carlson, I also think Carlson is going to be more consistent. I think Hayes has more of the, I'm not against Dylan Carlson winning this. Like I told you, I'd be okay with the NL Rookie of the Year thing. I think Carlson's going to be more consistent, and I think Hayes is going to have more of his highs and lows. But sometimes when you're doing this, you see those extreme highs and don't usually look at the extreme lows. And right. Sometimes consistency is good too. But as we see with it, I mean, you have guys sometimes who win the NL Rookie of the Year or like some kind of award just because of how they perform from August to October. It happens like that. So you never know.
Yeah, it's definitely you can have that recency bias like you mentioned. Yep. But I think it'll be interesting. It'll be exciting of all the key buzzwords that I've mentioned. Do you have anything else you want to say about Hayes before we wrap up or any other questions about Carlson?
I have two things to say.
All right.
One, I think Hayes will be the best third baseman in this division.
Wow.
Not now, in 3 years.
Okay.
3 years. And I think Dylan Carlson will be the best right fielder or outfielder in this division in 3 years. I really think so. That is my hot take on that. I think both of them are cementing themselves as easily the two best prospects in this division by a long shot until Kumar Rocker or Jack Leiter come along. But either way, I think those two right now, and you could probably agree with me, are the clear-cut best prospects in this division right now.
Oh, I totally agree. And especially with I feel like Milwaukee is kind of a down prospect. Chicago didn't really get a lot of prospects back in the move that they made for Darvish. And, you know, the Reds didn't have any prospect that was good enough to play shortstop. So they're moving Suarez over to shortstop. Right. So I think that at least in 2021, so I think there's no question that these two guys, they could be the face of the NL Central for many years to come, especially if they both stay with their respective teams. But
I think Carlson will stay in St. Louis. Not so sure about Hayes. We see how we treat our superstars over here in Pittsburgh. Sorry if that got anybody's skin, but, you know, it's just how it is.
We'll see how it goes. Hopefully hopefully Hayes can be the turning point for you guys keeping your superstars. We can have fun battles in the NL Central for years to come. But Ethan, why don't you go ahead and Shay, where we can find you on Twitter and social media.
You can find me at Locked On Pirates on Twitter. It's a big, nice little yellow logo with Key Brian Hayes wearing sunglasses on his last day of spring training as the cover photo. So there you go.
Love it.
You can find me on Twitter at @MVP_Ethan. I remember the last time that Lucas did it, he said it was a dash. It is an underscore. And it's also like capital, lowercase, capital, all that good stuff. But, you know, if you want to listen to me be in pain about the Pittsburgh Pirates, all the will to you. I'm here Monday through Friday. There you go.
Love it. Well, I appreciate time, Ethan, and had fun on both of my show and your show. So thanks for the time. Hopefully it'll be a fun year. And everybody else, thanks for listening. Hope you guys are excited for opening day tomorrow on Thursday with the time this gets released on Wednesday. So be sure to stay safe, stay well, and have a fantastic rest of your day.
Oh, yeah.